asking the right questions can greatly impact your future, especially when it comes to your finances.
So if you're looking for a financial advisor you can trust, certified financial planner professionals are committed to acting in your best interest. That's why it's got to be a CFP. Find your CFP professional at letsmakeaplan.org.
In recent weeks, we've really focused on some ways that listeners can boost their income. So whether that's through starting your own side business and growing your network like Hala talked about, or when we talked with local realtor Alan about diving into investing in real estate, well, what better way to test the waters? While you are away, your home could also earn extra income.
That's right. Your empty space could be an Airbnb while you're traveling, because that's all you need to become an Airbnb host. It's a lot easier than you think, and you don't need to Airbnb your entire house. You could just host your extra spare room. Your home might be worth more than you think. Find out how much at airbnb.com/host.
Supercharge your work decks with AI-powered Canva presentations. All you do is start with a prompt. You describe your presentation in a few words, and Canva presentations will generate captivating slides that you can then customize in seconds.
Canva presentations are designed for every workplace and every department. Whether you work in sales, marketing, HR, ops, and more, Canva presentations can generate any deck you want for work. Sales decks, marketing presentations, onboarding plans, you name it. Any department can save time on any presentation with AI.
Generate slides in seconds with Canva presentations at canva.com, designed for work.
Welcome to How to Money. I'm Joel.
And I am Matt.
And today we're talking student loan silly season, revenge spending, and entrepreneurship everywhere all at once.
Not to be confused with Everything Everywhere All at Once, which I think is the only Oscar-nominated movie I've seen this year.
Oh, really?
You saw it.
Seen some other ones.
We talked about it. Which other ones have you seen?
Banshees of Inisherin.
Oh,
so good.
You're gunning for that one, right?
I love that one. Although I loved Everything Everywhere All at Once, too.
Yeah.
I'm not sure. Is All Quiet on the Western Front nominated for Best Picture?
I'm not sure.
I don't know. But whatever it's nominated for, it should also win. That was a great movie, too.
Are you going to watch the Oscars?
No.
Feel like
I have better things to do with my time.
I as well. It was something that Kate and I used to be into.
Same.
I feel like we kind of caught it maybe at the height of award show. I feel like 10 years ago, it was something. The Oscars, the Grammys, they were all events. Like, we would have friends over and we would sit there and talk about music and
I never
film.
Went that far.
Yeah. Well, we only did it a couple times.
But there were some actually, I feel like the movies that came out this past year were better movies than there have been in recent years. Like, there was some really good stuff.
Top Gun, like the classic big screen blockbusters that everyone wants to go see.
That was
see.
Pretty good. That wasn't in my top favorite.
That was nominated
was
too, right?
I think so.
Yeah. Okay. So I've seen two.
I don't even know what's nominated.
I don't know either.
All I know is, okay, best supporting actor needs to go to Barry Keoghan, I think.
Who's that?
He was in Banshees of Inisherin, and he was so good. But I really love that movie.
Sorry, I'm gonna have to check it out.
I like depressing stuff, so.
Enough about the entertainment talk. We want to talk about Senate bills that are slowly working their way through our state legislature. So literally, politics policy isn't something that we normally follow on ever,
or talk about.
Definitely
on the show,
talk about.
On the,
yeah,
maybe
talk
follow
about the show.
More in our personal lives.
There's a couple that we keep up with. But Senate Bill 55, also known as the Lemonade Stand Act, looks like it's going to make its way through and actually become law.
Yeah, which is cool.
Yeah, yeah.
Well, so basically, what it's going to do, and this is in our home state of Georgia, and the reason we're talking about it is because it has, I think, implications one here in the state, but like if bills like these pass in other places, this is just a good thing because it would prohibit regulations on businesses that are run by kids under the age of 18.
And basically, allows for kids to run a lemonade stand.
Right? Yeah, and because like we've seen more stories pop up of like. People shutting down police officers coming and like shutting down lemonade stands all across the country, and these little 8-year-olds, 9-year-olds making, you know, petty change, but they're learning the basics of running a business and how economics works. I want to see this pass, and I think it will, but it seems like it's got enough support. But this is the kind of thing where it's like, why are we shutting down?
It's so dumb.
9-year-olds making $20.
Like, I get it that there are laws on the books that say that kids can't run lemonade stands, but what officer or like who's going to show up and actually shut down a lemonade stand? Like, anybody who is buying a cup of lemonade or a coffee or a cookie.
Or some hot
like,
chocolate.
Are they expecting, like, did the kids wash their hands before they start serving my drink? I don't know. There's a good chance they didn't. But you're also not expecting there to be a health inspection score posted,
right,
you know, on a stand next to the table. You, like, by purchasing something from one of these stands, like, you're assuming a certain risk, and it's silly to basically make these kids, or in a lot of cases probably their parents, jump through a bunch of hoops in order to actually be able to participate within entrepreneurship. Like, it makes me think of selling golf balls as a kid. I grew up in Augusta, Georgia, a lot of golf courses and golf balls, and me and my friends, we'd go hunting through the woods, finding long forgotten golf balls. We'd take them home, wash them up. We had hundreds of these golf balls.
Yeah.
And then we'd sit, not roadside, but cart path side with a little table. And we, you know, we'd sell like three or so golf balls for a dollar. But guess what? I would not have done that if there was someone riding around cracking down asking to see my stupid permit.
Sure, yeah, if you needed a permit to
get it. It is very dumb.
Yeah, and so I like seeing stuff like this. And I want to see more kids being able to learn at an early age kind of what it takes to make money. Like, these are they're great lessons. We had a neighbor kid who used to make his own ice cream and sell it. And
that's right.
And that's like, he learned a lot in that. And his mom was like, okay, listen, here's how much the ingredients cost. You're going to have to pay me out of the profits. And he learned a lot about what it takes to start his own business and make some money doing it.
Plus, he was following Jenny's recipes. So
it was delicious.
Well. So he was making like some top-notch homemade ice cream. Yeah.
It was good stuff. So yeah, I just kind of wanted to talk about that because it's cool to see. And if you haven't done a lemonade stand with your kids, it's one of the best ways to kind of teach them some of the basics of personal finance. And we're getting to the point where, I don't know, depending on what part of the country you live in and what the weather is currently doing, we're getting to the point, at least here in Atlanta, where lemonade stands are on the horizon pretty soon. So
that's true.
All right. And one other thing I wanted to mention, Matt, our Facebook group just hit 10,000 members.
Woo!
Yeah. So
yeah, boy.
If you're not a part of the How to Money Facebook group, it's just a bunch of awesome people helping each other out. If you've got a money, I mean, nobody gets paid from anybody joining the Facebook group, but it is a great resource for people to be able to like bat ideas around, ask good questions. A lot of folks just helping each other out. It's one of the only places on the internet where people are nice to each other. And I like seeing that there's more folks participating in the group these days.
It's one of those good corners of the internet. Dude, let's talk about student loans because we got more drama on the student loan pause,
yes,
on the student loan forgiveness front. SoFi, they are suing the Biden administration over their latest student loan pause.
SoFi, by the way, is a fintech
newer fintech companies.
They specialize in private student loan lending, although they've expanded kind of the things that they do.
And in SoFi's court filing, they have called it an illegal overreach of power. Which is, honestly, this is akin to the argument being made right now against the $10,000 in loan forgiveness that the Biden administration is defending against the states. And so, yeah, what's going to actually happen here? We don't know. But SoFi and just a lot of the different companies who specialize in refinancing folks into private student loans have been harmed in a meaningful way by this pause. It has upended their business and the legality, you know, of these perpetual payment pauses. It's a bit questionable. And so, yeah, for that reason, student loan silly season is most definitely upon us.
Sure. Yeah. And the payment pauses made sense for a time being, and they were part of emergency measures. But I think especially after the president announced on 60 Minutes, hey, the pandemic's over, this made some of these fintech companies start to question, okay, then why are we still taking measures like we're still in an emergency situation, right? Mm-hmm. So what does that mean for individual borrowers? Well, we're not sure how quickly we're going to see a ruling in this case. The court systems, they take time, and we still don't know how long it's going to take for the Supreme Court to make a ruling on student loan forgiveness either. But like we've been saying all along, don't pay on the student loans while the payment pause persists, but do be saving up and preparing to resume that payment in the near future. Funnel those dollars into savings so that you're prepared to the max, right? So that you're completely ready. You're in a great financial position if or when student loans resume.
It wouldn't hurt to earn 3 or 4% on those savings, by the way, which is what you can earn with
exactly.
a high yield savings
account.
Just
make sure that it's in your budget, that the money's going somewhere so that you're not like completely caught off guard when those payments do come back into your life. And we could be talking about payments starting in June or July. It's just anybody's guess. But this lawsuit, I'd say, it makes it even more likely that the pause is going to come to an end sooner rather than later. By the way, there was a great story in Business Insider this week about refinancing student loans. You're going to start seeing more ads for refinancing with companies like SoFi or their ilk once this pause does end. So be prepared for that too, because while it does make sense in a very small percentage of instances, it makes zero sense for most folks, especially with rates going higher and potential new income-based repayment plans coming on the scene. I have a feeling SoFi is not going to see many people refinancing student loans with them, even when the payment pause is over.
Yeah, I can imagine many scenarios where they actually should refinance. Like maybe if they already had some private student loans and they happened to have had terrible credit at the time. And so maybe they did get a terrible rate. And if right now you can get a lower interest rate on your student loans, then maybe that is something you could consider. But otherwise, folks should be sitting tight and waiting for all of this to shake out.
Yeah, 4 or 5 years ago, there was a value proposition there to refinance into private student loans for some people. There's almost no reason for almost anyone to refinance into private student loans now.
Yeah. So on a related note, insanely rich angel investor, venture capitalist Mark Andreessen, he recently said that we are soon going to live in a world where you can have a TV the size of your wall that's only going to cost $100. And the cost of a college education is going to cost $1 million, which obviously there's a bit of hyperbole here, but not much. He mentions that this is largely due to just the government involvement within the different sectors where prices are rising the most, like healthcare, college. And so this is why we keep going back to the value proposition that a higher education, that a higher degree is offering, because it used to be a fairly easy decision to go to college, but it is not anymore. We touched on how more and more folks are considering the skilled trades, blue collar work, just a couple of weeks ago. And this is some more local news here for Atlanta, but the Atlanta International Airport, Hartsfield-Jackson, they have just launched a paid apprenticeship program where folks can, quote unquote, learn as they earn, which is awesome. Yeah. Like, we completely love this. And hopefully other businesses and other governments can start to implement similar programs where there isn't this default path to funnel folks into not only trying to achieve an undergraduate degree, but also oftentimes large amounts of student loans as well.
Yeah, I think we're starting to see different governments and different employers eliminate college degree requirements for certain positions. I want to see more of that because, and I think the hot labor market has a lot to do with that. When it's harder to find the workers you need, you open up those parameters a little bit more. And I think of that as a good thing. And college isn't for everyone. So opting out might be the best move, right? Or I would say for some people who college is for them and they want to save money, maybe think about going to college overseas where it's a whole lot cheaper. I think that can make sense for more and more folks. And the Wall Street Journal actually had an article about how more young folks are looking to go overseas to get that higher education to minimize their bill. How much can you save, though? Tens of thousands of dollars. And fortunately, many of the programs offered at these universities are taught in English, so it's not like you're going to have to pull out your Google Translate just to understand what the professor is saying. But
a slight modification from studying abroad in a foreign country.
Yeah. But it's going to be incredibly different on an experiential level, right, going overseas. And in a lot of ways, a good thing. But also, I think the requirements and the way these universities run their business is going to look a lot different than the way American universities do it. So you got to be prepared as a expat, like doing school abroad. But I think for a lot of folks, it just might be worth it. And so, if you don't want to worry about being in debt the rest of your life, if you are concerned about the amount of college debt you might have to take on if you were to go to the school of your dreams here in the States, well, college abroad, it just might make sense for a number of reasons, and in particular for money-saving reasons.
That's right, man. Yeah, that's another way that you can avoid the potentially long-term financial harm that's caused by being saddled with those student loans. And so, obviously, a big part of the reason to get an education is that it's going to help you to get a job. I'm sure there's a certain element, there's a certain amount of self-edification that you are looking for when you go to college, too. I mean, but
you often do go to college to get more knowledge, what they say.
Oftentimes, you are also looking to increase your lifetime earnings, and available jobs evidently declined in January, but not to worry. There are still 1.9 job openings per every available worker out there. That is a lot of jobs. But if you are in the market to get a different job, preferably one with better pay, better benefits, you've got to tailor your resume to what those potential employers are looking for what they want. A human resources tech firm, they just released a list of the most in-demand skills based on a survey of almost 3,000 different employers. And at the top of the list, it turns out that management, communication, customer service, leadership, and sales are at the top of the list. And so basically, what we wanted to highlight here is that a lot of what they're looking for are soft skills. They're not necessarily looking for degrees in these areas. They're looking for the ability to perform these different tasks. So if you're applying for jobs, we just want to make sure that you are highlighting not just your education, not just your degree and your technical background, but those harder to define qualities that you possess as well.
Agreed. There's a lot that makes someone a good candidate for a job that goes beyond just, hey, I made straight A's in this and such course in college 10 years ago. You could also start, by the way, on the path towards working for yourself. And it looks like estimates of how many folks do just that might have actually been too small for years. We might have undercounted the amount of self-employed people in this country. The Bureau of Labor Statistics has basically said that roughly 7% of folks are self-employed around the United States. But new data from INBER, which is the National Bureau of Economic Research, they say that the number is likely closer to 15%. So I don't know. I guess it makes me think that freelancing is underrated. I like seeing that there are more self-employed people than previously.
Not only is it underrated, it's also underreported.
Yeah, that's right. It's multiple unders. And so Matt and I think that it can be the best route towards working for yourself full-time, starting that freelancing career, like getting it up to snuff on the side, taking on a side hustle client, not so that you can side hustle interminably, like buying into hustle culture, but so that you can hang your own shingle and over time start to work for yourself instead of working for somebody else. Like, and working for yourself, it's not always easy, right? But the thing is, it's not an all or nothing affair. And so, I don't know, it's interesting to see that we don't really know how many folks are working for themselves, but if the trend is growing, and it seems like during the pandemic, it's grown even more, a whole lot more small businesses have been formed over the last couple of years, which again, makes sense given kind of what was happening with the economy and to a lot of day jobs, even though unemployment is still is pretty much at a record low. We're always going to be cheerleaders for this trend of more people working for themselves.
That's right. And it all starts with that lemonade stand. So hopefully
get started young.
Yet again, and we'll full circle here. Hopefully that passes. But Joel, we've got a few additional stories that we're going to get to, multiple stories, in fact, here after the break, including the idea of revenge spending. What is it and have you been doing it? We will get to that plus a few others right after this.
Cachava is the all-in-one superfood shake made up of high-quality plant-based nutrients. It's got greens, superfruits, plant proteins, antioxidants, adaptogens, probiotics, and in other words, everything your body craves to feel your best. This is where Cachava really earns their 52,000 plus 5-star reviews. It tastes amazing. It's creamy and smooth with just water, and it comes in 5 delicious flavors. You can choose from chocolate, vanilla, chai, matcha, and coconut acai. Cachava is offering How to Money listeners 10% off for a limited time. I've been using Cachava in breakfast smoothies in the morning recently. It's just so nice to pack in a bunch of nutrients early in the a.m. in a way that's satisfying and energizing. So if you want to optimize your breakfast, your workout shake, be sure to check out Cachava. Just go to Cachava.com/howtomoney. That's spelled K-A-C-H-A-V-A, and get 10% off your first order. That's KACHAVA.com/howtomoney.
When it comes to financial advice, you got to trust the source. That's why you listen to this podcast. And if you're looking to upgrade your wallet, you need to turn to NerdWallet. Their expert team of nerds dives into the details to help you find smarter financial products. If you're paying for vacations with whatever card is in your wallet, you could be missing out on miles you didn't even know you were leaving on the table.
You can get a new card with more miles and more upgrades. What could future you do with more travel rewards? A hotel upgrade, lounge access? Wherever you go next, make it happen with a smarter travel credit card. Don't wait to make smart financial decisions.
Compare and find smarter credit cards, savings accounts, and more today at nerdwallet.com. As with all cards, credit is subject to lender approval and terms apply. NerdWallet, finance smarter.
I'm guessing that a lot of listeners are starting to solidify their summer travel plans. We always like to get the families together, Matt, for a week at the beach. Every single summer, we've already got that trip to St. Simons on the calendar. Pumped for that. But sometimes those vacations get expensive. So what better way to offset some of those costs than to have your home earning some money while you're away?
That's right. Why let it sit empty when it could be earning extra income? It's the financially smart thing to do. So think it through. Maybe you've got some extra space in your home, or maybe you have an entire house to host, or maybe you're just going on vacation and your home is sitting empty. In every case, you can Airbnb it. You already have the space, so it won't be a huge adjustment.
I mean, the way I see it, if you're not using your space, you have two options. You can let it just sit there empty, or you do some optimizing and make some money off it. Really, if you think about it, you already have an Airbnb. You just need to start using it. Your home might be worth more than you think. Find out how much at airbnb.com/host. All right, the Friday flight continues, and we will get to that story on revenge spending in just a second. Mm-hmm. It's messing up a lot of people. But first, we got to get to our ludicrous headline of the week. This one comes from Axios, and here's how the headline reads. Credit card debt soars as perks proliferate. I love alliteration. There's a lot going on in that one. So. But credit card debt is at an all-time high, right? And it's inching closer to that $1 trillion mark, which is just kind of a meaningful milestone to cross. Not one that I would say is
it's not one that we're going to necessarily celebrate,
right?
But we will let you know when we sadly
if we had like
get there.
An applause sounder, we would not use it for this one. But we just talked about using credit cards as nature intended. That was episode 629 not too long ago. And the first rule of using a credit card well is to pay the balance off on time and in full. I think we highlighted that multiple times during that episode, Matt, because it's so important. Every time we talk about credit cards, we want to make sure people know,
yep.
Hey, guess what? Don't let the credit card rewards tail wag the dog so that you're using something that's going to cost you money. But only 54% of folks, as it turns out, do that. Only 54% of folks pay off their credit card balance on time and in full. And so if you're not in that camp, we would say put the plastic down. Even though credit card rewards continue to get better, they continue to get richer, there continue to be a wider variety to make people happy, whether it's free food delivery service or something like that, it doesn't matter how impressive those rewards are if you're paying something like 18 to 25% on your purchases because you're not following the number one rule of credit card use. These are the kind of stats we don't like to see. We don't mind credit cards. And in fact, we think they can be the best spending tool for a lot of people, but not if you're in that 46% of people who don't use them properly.
That's right. Yeah. And yeah, there's a part of that headline that we're all about, right? The perks proliferate.
Yeah.
Part of the headline we're all about. But we don't want folks to be overly focused on chasing after those perks, those rewards, those points to the detriment of their overall financial health. And it's not just about using the cards properly, but I think sometimes when they first kind of start dipping their toes in the personal finance waters a little bit, they see this thing like the different rewards that credit cards offer. And before they establish a solid financial foundation, they are looking to kind of some of these tertiary, some of these extra fancy ways where they can score some additional benefits. So it kind of makes me think of, I've been working out, Joel, so I take some vitamins, some additional protein supplements to make sure I'm consuming enough protein. Do you know you're supposed to consume like a ridiculous amount of protein, evidently?
Yeah.
Like way more than I think most people can normally consume, I guess, via regular foods.
That's why I eat 3 steaks every morning, Matt.
All that to say, you don't need to mess with that kind of stuff unless you're eating properly, eating well-balanced, healthy meals. Beyond that, if it's like, okay, sure, if you want to like spend a little bit of money on some vitamins or supplements, I think that's totally fine if that's what you want to do.
But you can't just eat McDonald's every day.
You can't eat garbage and then focus only on the supplements. Exactly.
Or say, I'm not going to work out, but I'm going to take the protein shakes and maybe that'll bulk me up. It's like, not in the way you want.
Exactly. Yeah, there's a certain order. There are prerequisites that we think you need to accomplish first before moving on to some of these different benefits that credit cards can offer. But we were talking about credit cards, Joel. Let's shift now to gift cards because we got some more sad stats of the week here. 2/3 of Americans have an unspent gift card hanging out somewhere around the house, most likely at the bottom of a drawer somewhere. And 1/2 of Americans say that they lose gift cards before they even use them. These stats come from a new Credit Summit report. And overall, there is $21 billion in unspent gift card funds, which is so much stinking money that is being lost. That's currently sitting idle that may never actually get put to use. And so there are, I guess, at least 2 things that we can take away from these stats. First of all, use your gift cards, obviously. Round them up. Start making those purchases. Because if we're not proactive about spending the money that is actually on these pieces of plastic, we're likely going to forget about them completely. I am proud to say, Joel, that, well, how long ago was it that I mentioned that Home Depot gift card?
Oh, yeah, not too long ago.
Put that junk to use.
There you go.
It's no longer sitting there in my wallet. Kate, actually, I was like, here, you take this. We bought some new planes with it. But secondly, if you've got gift cards to stores that you don't care about, well, we would recommend that you sell them. Cardcash.com, that is a great site for you to take some dollars, some you name the store, whatever bucks, and actually get cash for those so that mm-hmm. you can spend or save those dollars in whatever way that you would prefer.
And you're not going to get dollar for dollar, right, by selling your gift card, but it is going to be a way you're going to take something that might have gone completely unused and turn it into something that you can actually use, which is cash that can be spent anywhere. I've never liked taking something, this beautiful green piece of paper that you can spend literally anywhere you desire, and saying, you know what I'm going to do? I'm going to turn this in specifically for a piece of plastic that lets me spend it only one specific retailer. It just doesn't make sense to me. Yeah. And I think people think it's a thoughtful gift.
I get it. I feel like
but
I used to.
But it's dumb and it's bad, and we should stop normalizing it, because it's just a really bad thing to do.
All right. I'm going to come down a little bit more than on team gift card, I guess, because I think it makes sense. Like, if you know somebody, for instance, like, you know somebody that might love a particular store, right? And you know that they've purchased some things from that store, but you don't know what exactly they've purchased. Mm-hmm. I think getting a gift card for that specific, like, it makes me think of...
Problem is, we see these stats, though, and we know what happens to a lot of the gift cards. They get forgotten about. They get unspent. They get lost. And I think
those are the less thoughtful gift cards.
You know
right?
what I don't
like,
lose?
I think those are some of the gift cards to, like, some of these national
21
chains.
Billion. It's a lot of money.
That's
you know what doesn't
money.
Get lost? A $100 bill when someone hands it to me. Doesn't get lost ever.
Yep.
And I can't imagine many people lose $100. So I would rather give somebody the cash with a thoughtful note that says, hey, I know you like L.L. Bean. Why don't you go get yourself a nice rain jacket over there? Something like that. But you can personalize it and make it seem intentional with the card that goes along with the gift. But gift cards are just, I don't know, our tastes change. Yeah. There's so many ways that
gift cards also
slip through the cracks.
So another argument for gift cards is that oftentimes you are... like, you were directing your dollars towards a particular business, and oftentimes like a local business, right?
Yeah.
And so
during the pandemic,
it
made more sense for local restaurants.
Well, we talked about
that a lot.
In effect, what you're doing is you are able to curate an experience, though. And so by giving somebody a gift card, you're saying, I want you to go to this place, A, maybe because I know that they're a small business, like a small local business, but B, I want you to experience the great food that they have. Kate and I got my parents a gift card to a local restaurant because I know that they prize their lunch dates that they do every single week. So I'm like, I love that they do that, and I want them to continue doing that. It's almost like a vote in the box of experiences over stuff. Because with money, it's like, okay, like, yes, they could use that to put towards an experience, like a vacation or going out. Like, the inflexibility of a gift card is kind of the point, if you specifically want to facilitate a specific experience for those folks.
Just sad that the downsides are pretty severe when, for a lot of people, when it comes to gift cards,
it's absolutely the responsibility of the receiver to put those cards to use. And I completely am 100% on board with that. Yeah. I guess as a giver, I'm feeling more, I guess, leniency to say, all right, if you want to like point somebody in this direction, that's what gifts are, right? It doesn't necessarily have to be something that is fully optimized, but it is, I totally agree. It is sad to see that there's waste and that there is money that is going underutilized. The optimization side of me kind of cringes a little bit when I see that.
So yeah, there's a lot of money left on the table on the gift card front. And I personally think the exception, the reason to potentially buy a gift card is if the business is giving you something extra. So if you're getting $120 worth of gift card for spending $100, I think that's great.
Oh, like, yeah.
Take advantage of it. But
that's a deal right there.
If you're just trading the money straight up, it's not my favorite thing. But all right, let's talk about revenge spending for a second, Matt. One of the worst pandemic trends. It's basically when folks feel compelled to shop because they feel like they've been wronged or life is unfair. And so I think a lot of people fell into this, that we were all kind of wronged by the pandemic. Something was taken away from everyone. Other different people had more severe losses than others. The problem is, the only revenge that's happening, though, when you take part in revenge spending, is against yourself, your future self. And so people are finding that, you know, once they've gone down the revenge spending rabbit hole, it's hard to climb back out. A study from last year found that negative emotions influence our motivation to shop. I don't think necessarily that's groundbreaking stuff, but some people shop to make themselves feel better. We've kind of known that's been a thing for a long time, but other people shop as a way to regain a sense of control, which I think is interesting. And like, you've always been told not to shop at the grocery store when you're hungry. Well, I think it's important to mention, and it's important for people to think about the fact that they shouldn't allow themselves to shop online if they're in an emotionally charged state either. I think it's going to lead to spending that you might regret.
Totally. Yeah. Well, and specifically, what's so tough about that, about spending online, is there's no one there like watching you. It makes me think back when we're talking about sports gambling and how the rise of sports gambling apps on your phone. It's one thing to actually go to a place and there are certain constraints, whether it be distance or the inconvenience of having to actually go in person. But when you're just there on your phone, your own device, and you can make these decisions, potentially harmful financial decisions, mm-hmm. without there being much accountability, I think it's a much, much more slippery slope. But that being said, I'm not totally sure how widespread, how prominent revenge spending is. I feel like it may have been used by like two people on TikTok. And then one reporter saw it and was like, I'm going to write a story about that.
That is a trend these days.
I think that's how quiet quitting caught on. But even if quote unquote revenge spending is potentially overblown as a phenomenon, I think it's worth mentioning just the psychological reality, the different emotions behind what causes us to spend money. So when we're angry or when we're sad or when we're bored, we're going to be more likely to buy something to cheer us up. And a news story came out recently too, where actually bad weather also causes us to spend more online. Like when
it's raining, we spend more than when it's windy, right?
And when it's snowing outside, watch out, you're gonna order a lot more online.
Well, so we used to have to drive in the rain too, the store
we have fewer constraints, and yeah. What that means is whether it's you can call it due diligence, you can call it shopping for a deal, but a lot of those things have been removed and we spend unfettered. And so knowing that, I think that is the first step towards taking steps just to avoid that kind of unhealthy behavior.
Yeah, I can totally see that sort of impulse to spend more on a rainy day where you're like, I'm just going to
sitting around,
hop on the gram and do some digging and or get onto my favorite deal site or start shopping at my favorite retailer or dig into those emails that I've been sent that's, it's 20% off this week. I can see how weather might influence us on that. So it's fascinating. And I think the more we understand the psychology, we understand what's happening, the more we can be like, wait a second, it's easier to right the ship when we know kind of what's happening behind the scenes in our brains and kind of how retailers, like we talked about not too long ago as well, the psychological tricks they're playing on us to try to get us to spend more money.
Totally. Yep.
All right. So we're talking about spending, Matt, let's talk about cars. Because if you care at all about your financial health, you might want to avoid buying a car like ever. Or maybe that's hyperbole. We'll see what happens with the new and used car market moving forward. But we have some new stats. Used car prices for dealerships are up something like 4.3% month over month. So,
and specifically the wholesale, like the wholesale numbers. So what the
dealerships
are paying for exactly
at the auctions, right? And so the pandemic effect, it seems like it's still with us actually, impacting the availability and the price of both new and used cars. So like a lot of other things that have been impacted by supply chain dynamics and hot inflation, prices are going to fall at some point, but they're likely not going back to pre-pandemic levels, at least anytime soon. And it's like the same thing that's happening with homes, Matt. Perpetual undersupply likely means that prices are going to remain inflated, even if they don't remain quite this spicy. But seeing that stat made me think that it's likely that consumers are going to see higher prices on used cars pretty soon.
Yeah. So on that note, car debt is actually rising rapidly. We've talked about how a lot more folks are signing up for a $1,000 plus car payments, which we hate seeing. But more consumers are also driving around with negative equity these days as well. And so if you haven't heard of that term before, that means that they're trading in a car that they're upside down on, buying a new one, and then rolling over that old loan where they owe money into a new one. Mm-hmm. And that total amount that they owe is now much more than the value of that new vehicle or even used vehicle that they're driving around. They often have to take a higher interest rate in a longer term. Oftentimes, we're talking about 84 months here, which just ensures that they're in debt for a long time to come. And man, on top of that, we're seeing more car loan delinquencies as well. So all of these things combined, all of these factors, is a growing trend that could fuel even more delinquencies in the future. And so we want folks to avoid this trend. We would recommend for folks to drive your car until it is fully paid off, then keep driving it longer. And then ideally, next time you purchase a vehicle, you're able to have enough cash on hand that you pay cash for that car, opposed to financing a depreciating asset.
Yeah, like you said, like drive your car until it's paid off and then keep driving it. Because a lot of people, they pay off the car and then they're like, boom, that's my ticket to buying another one. But
in their minds, it's a finish line.
Yeah.
But like, we do not want you to think of paying off that car as the finish line, as the permission slip that you are now allowed, that you're given to then go buy another vehicle.
Yeah.
No. You now have a paid for car. Like, think about all that you can now do with that money that you were funneling towards whatever terrible car loan you may have taken
right.
out.
Well, in the worst case scenario is that driving around with that negative equity in your life, right? Yeah. Where you're trading in a car to upgrade, and you just bought a brand new $30,000 car, but somehow your loan is $42,000 because you still had owed money on that last car that you traded in. It's a losing proposition for everyone, and I hate to see it proliferating, and I want How to Money listeners to avoid it like the plague. But let's talk about interest rates for just a second, Matt. Is the Federal Reserve trying to get people fired? Well, there was some sparring in hearings on Capitol Hill this week about just that. And Senator Warren, she asked Jay Powell about why he's trying to put millions of folks out of a job. And he basically responded that he's not. That's not what he's going for. He's trying to curb inflation, which impacts 330 million folks. And so he's trying to balance basically the labor market, which remains super hot despite Fed rate hikes, and price stability at the same time. So we're actually going to talk about how the Federal Reserve's rate hikes are impacting us, how they're impacting our wallets and our personal finances. We're going to do a deep dive on Wednesday of next week. So
yeah, we are.
Make sure, if you ain't subscribed to the How to Money podcast, that you hit the subscribe button so that you get notified of every new episode that comes along.
That's right. But before we go, we've got a newsletter referral shout out, and Amy P. sent our newsletter along to some friends. And so Amy, we are incredibly thankful for you for supporting not only the podcast, but the How to Money newsletter. If you're hearing us talk about this and you're saying, what is the How to Money newsletter? Just go to howtomoney.com/newsletter. And every Tuesday morning, you will get an email in your inbox with all of the latest personal finance nuggets that we think you need to know about.
Yeah. In a fun, down-to-earth manner, baptize yourself in the glory that is the How to Money newsletter at howtomoney.com/newsletter.
Jill's over here getting religious. But that is going to be it for this episode. We hope everyone has a fantastic weekend. And Joel, until next time.
Best friends out.
Best friends out.
Upswell Marketing would like to remind you that when customers choose your small business, they're really choosing you. So focus on super serving your existing customers and let Upswell handle the pipeline generation of new leads and customers.
Upswell specializes in developing customized direct response campaigns and is now offering a no obligation free assessment of your current marketing strategies.
Not to mention, new customers also receive 15% off their first order when they mention that they heard about Upswell on this podcast. For more information, visit upswellmarketing.com. That's upswellmarketing.com.
There's two kinds of people in the world, people who love Health Aid kombucha and people who have never tried it. The bubbly mix of probiotic tea and refreshing juice is delicious and good for your gut health, with great flavors to choose from that you can't help but love. If you've never tried it before, maybe try a bottle or can of passion fruit tangerine or ginger lemon. Your taste buds and your gut will thank you. Look for the brown bottle with an anchor on it and try Health Aid kombucha today.
Health Aid kombucha.
The Toolkit Podcast is where your favorite filmmakers come to talk about their craft and process.
I don't want a sloppy angle in my movie ever.
It's like being a dancer. You find the freedom in the structure.
It's where Tarantino, Gerwig, Scorsese, and Jordan Peele discuss their latest films, and showrunners take us behind the scenes of the best of TV.
Hosted by IndieWire's craft team, Toolkit is an award-winning podcast that gets at the heart of what really matters for filmmakers, like Spike Lee.
It comes back to this storytelling. What can I use in my toolbox